We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 294. Scott, how's it going this fine Sunday morning?
We got another infielder. That's big news, right? Huge news. Another infielder.
Not name Manny. Just what we all wanted.
Not name Manny.
Oh.
Not name Manny. This is another wrench or another little curveball, I guess, that the Yankees are throwing the fan base. The fan base that has no idea what's happening. Like, literally. the amount of off-base reports and, like, and thoughts and just what everybody thought was going to happen this offseason, everybody's off base. It's crazy how, you know, how far away from what we all thought was going to happen is actually happening.
It was a long time. We're going to get into all of it. It was a long time narrative, basically, since they started offloading payroll in the 2016 season. Everyone was eyeballing this offseason. And I'm not quite sure if it was fans overhyping it, fans creating that narrative, if it was the media creating that narrative, or if it was the Yankees selling their fan base on, hey, we're giving up on this season, the 2016 season, in order to prep for a big offseason in a couple years. And I don't know if that was just spun out of control by fans and media, or if the Yankees just changed their plan. I don't really know what happened, but yeah, a lot of people pissed off about this DJ LeMahieu signing,
which is crazy though, because it's not anything about LeMahieu as a player. It's just who he's not. That's the thing that people are upset about. But you know, quickly on that narrative and how you know, I think the fan base has taken the way that the Yankees are supposed to be conducting themselves in this offseason. And you mentioned back in 2016 giving up the rest of that and getting young. Well, they did that. They ramped up the process of quote rebuilding or retooling or whatever you want to call it, and got very young and got a bunch of young talent as they were having some of this wave of young talent come up through the Yankees system. So the fact that they were talking about it, I was reading like some of the old quotes that they were that, you know, our boy Hal and some of these other guys were throwing out there. But a lot of it was saying that they're making these moves so that they can be flexible and be in position to make moves later, speaking about this free agent class too. And I think when everybody sees that, they're like, oh, they run with that in their own head. And mm-hmm. they say, well, they're going to spend, you know, as much money as possible to get as much talent as possible. And that's just not the case.
What was the word? What was the word they was it payroll flexibility?
Yes, the word has been flexible. That's been a buzzword and a keyword that people take with a grain of salt and just kind of they expand that word flexible. They're flexible with the word, if you will.
That's fine, but you also have to think about Brian Cashman's statements a couple weeks ago saying they're a fully operational Death Star. When he says that, I don't think people are thinking DJ LeMahieu. Fully operational Death Star means they're going to go out and attack the top free agents, Machado or Harper or both. That is the line that a lot of people draw to those statements. And I think that's fair.
Yeah. I mean, I get that. And the fact that they're in on them is maybe what Cashman is saying. They're going to be going after
these
guys.
Everybody.
But as far as being aggressive and making the highest bid and they're getting outbid. Corbin obviously was a significant amount more money that he received as an offer from the Nationals, and you know, I don't blame them for not going to what the Nationals paid for Patrick Corbin. Honestly,
no.
But when you're looking at these Machado things, the problem with all this right now, here's the big issue I see. Nobody has any goddamn idea what offers are out there. No one has any idea. All of this is speculation. We don't know how much money the Chicago White Sox have offered Machado. We don't know what the Phillies have offered Machado. We don't know if there's other teams in the mix that have said they're going to offer you a contract, but they're waiting until you know things are or the dust has settled a bit, and then they will come in with their best offer. We don't know. So all of this is just rampant, absolutely just vicious speculation on what is happening, because this is the type of thing. And like, I would not be surprised at this point, once we've all given up complete hope, that Brian Cashman swoops in and offers, you know, $1.
Yeah, more. I saw that take. I saw that spin on Friday afternoon after the LeMahieu news. People saying, well, now the Yankees have leverage over Machado because they can say, they can sit there and tell his agent, hey, we have enough infielders. We don't even need Machado. Here's our final offer. Take it or leave it.
I'm not even so much there as that. This just may not change things because Cashman may have other ideas.
It's got to change things.
If there's a trade involved, then no, it doesn't.
If there's a trade involved, yeah. Fine. That's always...
But I always thought that would have to happen anyway.
It's always on the table. We've said that all offseason with if they decide they want to trade Andujar, and that still, to me, is the only guy they'd be willing to trade out of that infield, then yeah, of course that reopens the door for Machado. But as it stands now with the roster, with... LeMahieu, Mr. I'm going to call him Mr. French. You good with that? Do you want to call him Mr. French I googled what LeMahieu means and I think it means the Matthew.
The Matthew.
I'm fine with either.
I kind of like the nickname. Matthew.
The Matthew?
Yeah, the Matthew.
All right, so
that's like a dumb version of LeMahieu.
With the Matthew on the roster, if Andujar's still there, there's no way they're signing Machado. It's just not possible.
No, I agree. But I think that the fact that LeMahieu's there doesn't change. If that was the plan, if Machado was going to be signed, if Brian Cashman and Steinbrenner's had full intentions of signing Machado and they're just waiting till their moment to strike, I don't believe that Andujar was going to be on this team anyway. I still think that if you're doing that, then you're really fighting another uphill battle by trying to move him into another position. You're just doing a lot of things that to me don't make a lot of sense. When you see a guy struggling defensively, you don't move him around. Not that I don't think he could probably play first base to an adequate level, but at this point, like you would want him to be working on it as well. So I don't know. I think that if Machado was in the plans and it's still in the plans, I think Andujar is also in the plans for being traded. And if that's the case, then this signing means nothing. It just means that they're adding more bodies.
They could take kind of what I think would be a hard left here and say, Andujar, you're now our DH. We're going to use Stanton a lot more in left field. He's going to be basically the everyday left fielder. And then Gardner's going to be the floating outfielder. And then it could, in theory, work.
Yeah, I still don't see that. That to me is probably one of the more, one of the least available options, really, because then you're loading up that DH spot. And we know that the Yankees need that DH spot to rotate some guys in and out. And then, you know, if that's the case too, then we're completely forgetting about Clint Frazier and he's not even on this team.
Well, at this point, Clint Frazier is as much of an unknown as anybody.
But to be fair, Clint Frazier currently right now is a healthy player coming into spring training. And yes, he had these head issues and they've lingered and such. The best thing for that is rest. You know, it's not like so we could go and pinpoint when and how and where. So right now he's a healthy player.
What are your thoughts on the fact that he too is a cat guy?
Yeah, I don't know
if you saw
like
his Instagram post. He's taking selfies with his cat. He loves his cat. I mean, it's not a hairless cat like Bird, so it's not as creepy. But last week you took a very hard stance on Bird and said if he was a dog guy, maybe he would have won an MVP by now.
And I think more because it was he's such an extreme cat guy with the hairless cat. Like, that thing is just, it's just a strange-looking cat. Like, I do believe there's voodoo involved.
Let's call it what it is. It's weird. It's creepy.
It's a weird cat that has put a hex on him.
Uh-huh.
It's not even a curse. It's a hex.
Yep.
It's witchcraft. So, if he was a dog guy, then he wouldn't have a witch living with him in his coat. You know, it's just strange.
I also think that the cat isn't even Frazier's. I believe it's his girlfriend's.
And that's fine.
I think is a lot more. It's a lot different than Greg Bird having just living by himself in a New York City apartment with a hairless cat.
It's very different. Extremely different. Extremely different. And you know what? Like, Frazier's the cat that he was hanging out with. You know, it was a furry little cat. It was it was kind of a cute little cat. You know, it's fine. You're not taking photos of the cat like, you know, in your jacket and shaving it.
It's kind of like a redheaded cat. Kind of got the orange fur, just like Frazier. Kind of matches him.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, Frazier, the way he's all about, like, you know, being in style and all that stuff. So it doesn't surprise me as much. But yeah, girlfriend's cat. So we're okay with it now.
Man, we started off this podcast hot.
You took it to a cat level.
You came in, came in firing with the LeMahieu stuff. So let's break it down. 2 years, $24 million. The reports are that the Yankees want to use him as, they see him as a Ben Zobrist type. And yeah. I believe now we've been saying for 3 years that the Yankees are looking for a Ben Zobrist type. It was Tyler Wade was going to be the Ben Zobrist type. Neil Walker, the Ben Zobrist type. Like, all right, how long are they going to look for a Ben Zobrist type?
Well, I mean, he is that type of, you know, switchblade type of guy where he could go in there, have good at-bats, play different positions on the infield. So I like the move. I think it's a good move. I know a lot of people are looking at his splits from 2018 home and away. They're drastic. They're very, very, very different. And I know we tweeted it out on
Brock Pitcher and the Yankees podcast. Isn't great either. Yeah. I mean, last year was weird actually, because his slugging last year, home and road, were pretty similar, yeah. But his on-base percentage and batting average on the road were way lower than they were at home. But if you look at his career, it makes a little bit more sense. Home splits, career 330, 387, 448 with an 835 OPS. That's a tremendous player, especially for a second baseman. Then on the road, 264, 311, 362 slugging, which is low, 673 OPS. So they are pretty drastic, as you can expect from a Coors Field player.
And that's fine sometimes, you know, because we looked at someone was tweeting back, and I know this was a conversation that we had with some other people who write with Bronx Pinstripes, but look at what Aaron Judge's home splits are.
They're drastic. Even more drastic. As well. Even more drastic, yeah.
So, you know, I think the Yankees identified a player that would also play well at Yankee Stadium, a guy that can go the other way too. Similar to the way that they've looked at guys that, you know, haven't had success in other places. Luke Voit was another guy. They said, hey, this guy could go the other way. We think his offensive game plays to Yankee Stadium. And, you know, they were right about that for at least a month. We'll see how that plays forward. But I think what they're doing is they're identifying players that can hit the ball all over the place. That's one thing that I love about LeMahieu is we have a guy now in the lineup that doesn't strike out a ton, makes a lot of contact, and, you know, could maybe get a big single when we need it with runners on second and third. You know what I mean? Like, God forbid we have one of those guys that don't try to hit the ball out of the park.
The single is sexy again.
Yeah, I mean, with runners on, it's damn sexy. The ground ball and the ground ball the other way in the hole is sexy. You know, there's just a lot of things that I think he brings to the table that are complementary to what the Yankees roster and lineup currently has. And these players are needed. They're absolutely needed. And I know everybody wants the superstar guy and they want to go out there and get the big splash and the big name and all these things, right? I get it. You want star power. At the same time, the lineup and the team has to work as a unit together. The cogs all have to fit. You look back, I was doing some cleaning out of my closets, and I found a whole bunch of crap that I kept as a kid from like the Bergen Record and the Daily New York Times. I used to keep sports sections of like big events and such. So I have all the old Yankee stuff, and the Record used to do a full spread of caricatures after the Yankees would win. So I have one from 96, 98, 99, and I think I have one for 2000. But they have all of these... the players you're looking at, I'm looking all the names again, and just, you know, all the names are coming back. And you see how many complimentary players were on these rosters. It's crazy. Like, yes, there was some star, star power, but there were a lot of really good role players on these teams. And I think that's necessary.
So you're looking at LeMahieu as a role player.
Yeah, I think he is. I think he's a player
kind of an expensive role player. He is. $12 million a year for a role player.
I agree with that. I think that they're getting one of the better role players. I mean, that's what Zobrist got. Zobrist got a ton of money.
But Zobrist was an everyday player who played and just happened to play in different positions. Maybe that's what they're going to use LeMahieu as. We know he can play second base. He's a very good second baseman. Plus 67 defensive runs saved career at second base. So very, very elite second baseman. He's played only 245 innings at third base because he's had Nolan Arenado over in Colorado. He's not gonna play over him at third base. Plus two defensive runs saved at third base in limited innings. So let's just call him good at third base. There's also talks that the Yankees plan on using him at first base too, possibly. So he could end up getting five games a week if they move him around, if that's what they want to do.
Well, the other thing about that is I think that Now LeMahieu is an insurance policy at first base as well. So we have two unknowns at first base, right? We have Greg Bird that everybody has lost faith on. I mean, who the hell knows what he's going to be? He could be nothing or he could be something. We don't know. Luke Voit, right now we believe is a player. We only saw it on a very short sample size. So will he come out and be that same guy? Again, I think that's a relative unknown. So the fact that LeMahieu could come in and, you know, he's more of a veteran player. We kind of know what we're going to get with him. He could play good defense all over the place. And yeah, I think he is an insurance policy at first base now as well, because it's very possible that either Greg Bird or Luke Voit, one of the two, you know, doesn't make it through the full first half of the season.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. And you mentioned earlier that he doesn't strike out. He has a 15.2% career strikeout rate, which is pretty solid. And also Mike Petriello was tweeting about him. He's actually kind of fascinated by the Matthew. He said, I don't know if he's a good player or not, but the Yankees are about to find out. And he also is one of these players that has taken launch angle and really made it a part of his game over the last five seasons. His ground ball rates have gone down every year. So that's also something that plays well at Coors Field. It's going to play well at Yankee Stadium. That's probably what the Yankees nerds in that front office are looking at, right? They try and find these players that can fit the advanced metrics that they want to employ on this team. That's what they sold us. That's what they did with Luke Voit. That's what they sold us that they thought was going to be Brandon Drury. They keep trying to find these players that maybe other teams undervalue.
Yep,
and place value on them. They placed $12 million a year on him, and brought him in. And ironically, you look at what the Rockies did. The Rockies signed Daniel Murphy for twenty four over 2 years, and that's exactly what LeMahieu got. So it's kind of interesting that the Rockies chose Murphy over LeMahieu, and the Yankees are choosing LeMahieu over Murphy, because there were also some rumors that the Yankees might be interested in Murphy.
Yeah, I don't know. I think those rumors may have come from our fan base, but the fact they're very different players in the sense that you have Daniel Murphy, who also can play, I'm putting in air quotes, multiple positions, and then you have LeMahieu who can actually play real multiple positions. Yankees obviously put a much higher preference of the two players if you're comparing them directly to defense, run yep. prevention, and the fact that LeMahieu could come in there and play plus defense all over the field is a huge difference for what they can use for.
Oh, Murphy can't play defense anymore. No. And ironically, Murphy's more of an American League player at this point, and LeMahieu's probably more of a National League player.
But at the same time, the Rockies are leaning on the rest of their guys for defense as well. Like I think they believe that they have a good defensive team, period. And I think that you look at a guy like Murphy, and he's going to add a little bit more offense than LeMahieu. So they chose the offense and give him some more pop, whereas the Yankees are looking at these two players and saying, we want the run prevention, we want the flexibility, there's that buzzword again, and we want the guy that's going to come in and play complementary baseball to the guys that we currently have. And that, to me, is a big deal.
Would the Yankees have been better off with Murphy, left-handed hitter?
No. No, they would not have been, because they would have added to the problem of bad defense. And also a guy taking up another DH spot, which you need to be more of a rotation. Again, flexible.
Well, I think that they could have looked at Murphy more of a first base player.
I just don't think they're going to go out there and spend. I mean, if he's going to play defense, he's going to play first base. That's it. So you're pigeonholing yourself to that. Now you have a DH and three first basemen. So now what are you going to do? Something's got to happen soon. Whereas right. LeMahieu doesn't really make first base a logjam or DH a logjam. He's a guy that you could plug all over the place. So again, the word flexible comes up all the time. And when they were talking about, being flexible, quote, with their payroll and such, and that was getting under the luxury tax so that thing would reset, so that they would have more money because of the reset penalty. And then obviously now they're bringing in contracts that are also flexible. I mean, this guy's on a 2-year deal that he has flexibility all over the field. It's giving them a lot of ability to pivot in one way or another. If something is not working well, they can pivot because they're not going to be logged down by these large contracts, at least at this point.
So we kind of talked about what it means for possibilities of signing Machado. We think unless there's a trade, it's not going to happen. What does it mean for Gleyber?
Yeah, this is where it's interesting to me, is that You know, again, I think that we've all been trying to figure out what's going to happen at second base shortstop, right? Obviously, Didi's out for at least half the year. And we're looking at possible Troy Tulowitzki as a name that they've brought on. If this guy could be healthy, he could play some shortstop. And then Gleyber Torres also is a natural shortstop. So this may mean that, hey, they're going to they could possibly slide Gleyber over to shortstop, and LeMahieu could play, you know, in the beginning of the season, could be the primary second baseman. And they're going to go with that. That's that'll be interesting.
They didn't want that, right?
I don't know if they do. I think
I'm being sarcastic because the entire up until Friday, we thought they wanted to keep Gleyber at second base because that's what they see him as, a long term fit, and also they want him to work at second base. They want to have him keep taking reps at second base. They don't want to be moving him around. That was what we thought. That's everything we
Cashman has talked about that. Yeah, so
he has 100% he's talked about that. He did radio interviews where he said that they see Gleyber Torres as a long-term second baseman. So, that I mean, we didn't just make that up.
No, yeah, no, for sure. And there also could be another move coming where, you know, we see some insurance at shortstop. Like, there very well could be another guy that comes up. Or it's, you know, who knows, Tyler Wade.
Defense. I don't think you can add another infielder. Like, Hecheverria, you can't add Hecheverria at this point to the roster. Too many infielders.
I'm gonna be very clear how I think about Greg Bird. I'm certainly not convinced that he's gonna make the roster coming out of spring training.
Okay. So you have one first baseman, whether that's Bird or Voit. You have Gleyber, you have Tulowitzki, you have LeMahieu and Duhar. That's five infielders.
Yeah, I still think that they can. There's, if you bring a guy like Tyler, we don't know what the outfield looks like right now. I know they have an abundance of outfielders, but we don't know if some of them are alive or not alive, and how they're going to come out of spring training. But a guy like Tyler Wade, if a guy like Tyler Wade were to make the opening
it's
day
the
roster,
year finally for Tyler Wade.
Well, no, he made the. I mean, he's made the roster before, but
he made the roster. Last
He's basically going to be a defender. I mean, you're bringing him in as a defender. Again, we talked about this last week. I was my position was with him. They don't care about his offense at this point. They're not banking on his offense anymore. Like that ship has sailed. He is not going to be the DJ LeMahieu or the Ben Zobrist type. That's not him anymore. Now he is Brendan Ryan. Now he is a more flexible Brendan Ryan who could play the outfield as well if need be. He could play all over the field. And now you're bringing him up as a defender. And that's just what he is, a defender and a guy who can run the bases. To me, that's what they think Tyler Wade is. And if you're going to bring a guy like that in as a defender, then what's the difference in going out and finding someone, you know, who's a plus defender when you already have the guy in there who's very cheap, who could play all over the field, and you're not looking for offense? Because who cares? Because that's the way I see it.
Let's play the game. So Didi comes back in June or July. Let's assume everyone else is healthy, all the other infielders. So obviously the optimal defensive infield is with Didi at shortstop, probably Gleyber at second base, a first baseman, whether it's Voit or Bird, and LeMahieu at third. That's what I think would be the optimal defensive infield. Do you agree?
If we're talking about defense, yes.
So I guess where does that leave Andujar is the question. Does it mean that Andujar, like we saw in the playoffs, starts and then comes out in the sixth or the seventh inning? Does it mean he gets more DH time? Does it mean, like, what does it mean for Andujar? Because are they, I still don't know if they believe in Andujar.
Yeah. I mean, I think they believe in Andujar as a hitter for sure. And they're not going to come out. This is one thing that they're not going to tip their hand about. They're not going to come out and say anything negative about Andujar right now because they know what a commodity he is. He's probably their highest commodity that they have as a tradable asset. Right. So if you see Brian Cashman going out and talking shit about everybody else, has he come out and talked shit about Andujar? No, he has not. He has thrown a lot of support behind Andujar.
Hasn't really said anything about him.
Well, he's definitely not said anything negative about him. And because we all know what he is, he's the guy. I don't know. If I just said something right now, it would be complete bullshit. Just speculation.
Come on, that's all speculate. That's what this podcast is for.
The thing is that we don't know what the hell they're doing with Andujar. And I still think that there's still time left. We saw JD Martinez signed in February last year. Like these, there are still chips that are going to dominoes that will fall in this offseason. Everybody's acting like this offseason is over and was over by Christmas. No, there are still a ton of free agents out there. There are still a ton of moves that could possibly be made. And the fact that Andujar is still here, I still think he's the primary third baseman. I think that's how they think of him. But now that they have DJ LeMahieu, yeah, they're adding a guy that could play third base at a higher level. So does that mean they take him out in the sixth, seventh inning in a close game? Probably. That's probably how they would play that. And on a day where you know there's guys or there's a, one of the guys is like Tanaka's out there and we're getting more ground balls. Then you know maybe LeMahieu's starting at third with if there's a lefty heavy lineup, you know.
Right. That's not a 162 game solution. I'm sorry, that creates a problem for your team. That means you have to carry an extra infielder just to accommodate your shitty third baseman. That's not a good plan.
That's what you do though when you bring a Ben Zobrist type guy in there, a guy that plays all those positions. No, you have to have flexibility.
Ben Zobrist is a starter who just happens to play multiple positions.
Okay, fair.
Are they using LeMahieu as a starter?
Yes.
Or are they using him as a replacement player?
Like, well, as Didi is out, he's going to be a starter. There's no doubt about it. And if he plays to his abilities, then yeah, he's going to be a starter. And whether it's at first base or third base or second base, who knows? But yeah, or DH even. Yeah, I see him as a starter. I don't think they went out there and paid $12 million for him not to be a starter.
No,
When I say role player, you know, like I'm legitimately using that as a very.
Well, you were talking about like the '90s players, like the role players they had in those teams, like Luis Soho. Like that's not what I don't think they want LeMahieu to be. Luis Soho was a guy that played one inning a night.
Okay, let me rephrase with the way I distinct as a role player. I see a role player as a complementary player to the. There are many roles within a team, and if they're not all working together, then you're not going to get to the one place. So as a role player, you have to be complementary to what is already on the roster. And yeah, I see LeMahieu as a complementary player. If role player could be taken out of context, and you're saying that he's just a pigeonhole guy like a base runner, and that's it. No, I see him as the guy that has so much flexibility that he can move around. And yeah, he could be a starter every single day if you want him to be. But he's that type of guy who's going to fill the role of moving all over for defense purposes because he could swing the bat.
You mentioned something about free agency. I actually want to bring it up. So people are acting like this offseason is over, right? Like,
yeah.
Because Machado and Harper haven't signed. They're kind of clogging things up. Free agency is moving at a glacial pace once again. Do you think there should be some deadlines set in free agency where teams have to act by a certain date? And if they don't, then there's a penalty or something in place? Because it's kind of crazy what's happening with these players where they could be pitchers and catchers reporting and top free agents like JD Martinez last year, or didn't Arrieta not sign until like late into that process?
I think
like
Arrieta was late. I think Darvish was late. There were a lot of players that were late.
Alex
yeah.
Cobb, like these yeah. players that were thought would go off the market in a matter of weeks lasted the entire offseason. Do you think there needs to be something in place to fix this process?
Yeah, Moustakas signed a one-year deal late, staying in Kansas City at that point because, you know, he wasn't getting the multiple-year offers.
He took what he could get. He's like, shit. Didn't he turn down the qualifying offer of like $17 million
and then
ended up getting like 80% of that or 60% of that?
I don't remember what the ratio was, what he got, but he certainly didn't get what he was, what he, in my opinion, deserved on the free agent market. But yeah, I think a deadline like that would not be a bad thing, honestly. I think that it would move the owners. Because right now the owners are just, they're just waiting. They're shaking out the market. They're letting people sweat, and maybe now they think that this might be their last offer, so their people are accepting stuff. Like it's gotten to a point, and I know there's been a lot of talk all over social media about the fact, and Arrieta had that tweet we'll talk about that was kind of cryptic. Do you have it in front of you?
Yeah, he said, all of you 1 to 3 year players out there better be paying attention to what's going on in our game. You're next.
And this, so I think specifically he was more talking about arbitration and how that whole process plays out and is really, you know, in the owners are playing power positions at this point. And I think a lot of them, I think the free agent market is also delayed because of arbitration. I think the teams wanted to see where what arbitration would happen, you know, what guys would settle, what guys were going to go to the hearings, and how that was going to all shake out, and where that money was going to. So maybe they need to move that deadline up. Maybe the arbitration needs to be moved up, and because of that, the free agent market would then follow suit. But why not have a deadline for all of these things? And we have a trade deadline. Why not have a free agent deadline? Because to me, it would benefit the players and the teams by getting these guys in camp earlier or getting them solidified so they know what they're going to be doing earlier. To me, mm-hmm. when you know what your position is going to be, when you know where you're going to be the next year, it allows you to prepare better and more specifically and just have peace of mind at that point. So, yeah, I don't see a reason how it could hurt.
Yeah, and if it's not a hard deadline, then maybe it's milestone checkpoints where if you sign a player by, just, let's just say, December 31st, great, that deal is signed. But if you sign them after December 31st, there's some sort of like 10% penalty or something where you can still sign a player, but you're paying extra to something. I don't know what that would be, to the players union. If it goes somewhere, I don't know where, but you just have to, you can't just, I don't think it's fair to the players. And I understand these players still make millions of dollars, but it's not fair to have them wait out until February 20th or something.
No, especially when pitchers and catchers are reporting, you know, even before some of these guys are signing and they're trying to start up their own major league spring training camp by themselves. Like, it's crazy. It's what was, you know, transpiring last year. I don't know if the penalty will work because then you have, you know, possible guys waiting.
Of course, there's all implications of it. Yeah.
There's just a lot of bullshit that could go along with that. But I think if you impose a hard deadline and say, this is the deadline, like you do with trades, I mean, they do it with trades. Why can't they do it with free agent signings? It's make a decision. As long as you have ample time between arbitration settlements and free agent signings, the hard deadline, I don't see the problem.
Yeah. So then maybe like the
you got to make sure all the deadline. The money has to be known at that point. Obviously,
the arbitration deadline was this past Friday.
Right.
What was that? January 11th. Why is it January 11th? Like, why wouldn't it be like December 15th or something? Like, make it a lot earlier in the offseason.
Yeah, I think they could make it earlier in the offseason. I think that's one of the things they should do. Make at least if you're doing the arbitration hearings, and I don't know when all the hearings have to be finalized by, so that the money's completely in place. But you know, if you do it before the holidays, then you going into the holidays, you know what your current roster is and how much money you're giving out as far as the arbitration guys. And then you have this free agent deadline, you know, after the new year, maybe around the time or around this January 11th time that they have for arbitration now, make that the hard line and then move forward. I don't know why it would hurt.
If Harper and Machado don't get 10 years, do you think we'll ever see the mega contract again?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not in vogue at this point. No,
because seriously, like, if you're not going to give it to these players who are 26, 27 years old and in the top 25 players in the game on any given season, when are you ever going to give out a 10-year contract? You're certainly not going to give it to a 30-year-old at this point. Like, that is over with. So until the next 26-year-old free agent comes around, which doesn't happen every day because you got to come up at 19 years old. Mm-hmm. So when's it going to happen?
How old will Trout be when he hits free agency?
That's a good question.
26,
well,
probably
no,
around that age, 27?
No, he signed a
big one. Oh, yeah, he already signed that big one.
He signed a big extension. So he has signed through 2020, in which case he will be 28 years old.
So even at 28 years old, a Mike Trout. So here's what I think about these long-term contracts. I don't think they're going to be, obviously they're not prevalent. They're not going to be handed out as they have been, because I think when people are looking back at those 10-year deals, they're not good for anybody but the player. That they fall off at the end. It's not a great contract. I don't like them anyway. Like, I never liked them. You see what happened at the end of A-Rod's contract. Like, you have dead money at the end of it, and that's just something that the team has to know. But I wouldn't be surprised if they offered longer term contracts and they got up to the 10-year things if the money is spread out further, and that we get some of these longer contracts that where you have money coming into them that's maybe a lower AAV, but it's going, beyond their retirement years even. And then you have like a legacy type contract. I could see more of those at some point coming into play and being more popular, just because I think it adds flexibility.
Yeah. Let's talk about the arbitration. So the Yankees did avoid arbitration with a bunch of players. Hicks got $6 million. That was his final year. Bird, $1.2 million, first year. Romine, $1.8 million. That's his final year. Didi, 11.75 final year. Also, he's injured, so it's interesting. Paxton, the new Yankee, 8.575. He's in his second year of arbitration. and Sonny signed for less. He settled for $7.5 million. He was projected in the $9 million range. So I think what he's saying is, hey, now I'm more attractive to trade to any team that's willing to take me, maybe the Brewers or a small market team.
Or, hey, I'm too cheap not for you to keep me and put me somewhere.
He had no leverage, though, so obviously it's kind of surprising, though, he ended up settling for less. Severino and the Yankees could not come to an agreement. So Severino signed for asked for $5.25 million, and the Yankees filed at $4.4 million. So there's a gap there. It will likely go to an arbitration hearing. And it's going to be interesting because, yes, we know Severino struggled in the second half and he struggled in the playoffs, but he has been one of the seven best starting pitchers in Major League Baseball the past two seasons combined. I think he is going to win an arbitration. And we know how the Yankees front office handles these situations. Remember what Randy Levine said about Dylan Betances? Like, he trashed him. Absolutely eviscerated one of the fan favorites, a guy who grew up in the Bronx, and we criticized Levine for all that shit. I really hope this doesn't happen with Severino.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, these arbitration hearings can be ugly just because, you know, both sides are playing their hands and trying to put stuff out. But I don't really understand it, especially when you have a guy that's going to be a huge part of your team. To me, it's you're adding some you're just adding negativity that doesn't need to be there when. You know, these guys, I understand that it's, what is it, they're about 20% off as far as the numbers.
Yeah.
Find a middle ground on this. 5.25 and 4.4 at the end of the day. I mean, just find somewhere where you can be, you don't have to go to a hearing and you can come to an agreement. Like, to me, this is an absolute clear, let's come to an agreement and make sure that both sides are happy.
But each side is standing on the principle of the matter.
I guess so. And honestly, if I'm the Yankees on here, like, I'm coming closer to Severino because he is a very large part of the future. That's what they believe. They believe that they should believe it, that this guy is a huge part of what the Yankees are going to be doing in the future. And they shouldn't dick around. This is just being too cute.
Yeah. So, Jeff Passan wrote an interesting article on ESPN. I'm going to go over some of the highlights from it, but he said the three biggest stats that players used to win arbitration hearings are home runs, saves, and war. And if you look at Severino's war, like I said, he ranks top seven in Major League Baseball for the past two seasons combined. I don't see how he's not going to win that hearing. Right. You're a top seven Major League Baseball pitcher. You're gonna get your money.
Yeah, exactly. So why go through the whole lengthy process of doing this arbitration hearing and having all of the comments leak out and you know, hit Twitter and just build more of this negative infestation of you know, fan commentary, because that's what it's become. It's become a freaking hornet's nest of just negativity because, you know, of perception and people's expectations and you know, dumb comments and then the Yankees not hitting expectations, you know, wherever they were built. It's literally a hornet's nest at this point. So, it's just, to me, it's not worth it.
Let me run through this. So this is taken directly from the Passan article. Arbitration hearings start at 9 a.m. or 1 p.m. About 30 people are in the room, 10 on the player's side, 20 on the team's side. Each side gets a brief of the other team's argument, and then they each decamp to suites to begin constructing rebuttal. To begin, the player's side gets an hour to make its argument. After a 15-minute break, the team gets an hour. Following a 30-minute break, during which both sides finalize their closing arguments, the player's side gets a 30-minute rebuttal, and the team gets the same. Players often sit through a savaging of their accomplishments. Arbitration hearings are not for the weak of heart. That sounds awful.
It's like, you know what it is? It's we're going to air our grievances, you know?
It's Festivus.
It's Festivus. They might as well put
a
poll.
I got a lot of problems with you people.
Yeah, I got a lot of problems with you. I didn't like the way that you fell off the planet in the middle of August.
You were
when
tipping
we needed
your pitches.
You the most. Yeah, I mean, like, this is the Festivus of baseball. And why are we doing this? Like, getting your grievances off your chest in this instance is not a good thing. I don't, over, you know, in large respects and comparison to all the other money, peanuts. We're talking about peanuts here. And it's and not peanuts to Severino, but peanuts to the team. For one of your main players, one of your pitchers that you think is going to be a Yankee for a very long time and has been a Yankee for a very long time. Why? Right.
But see, but we look at it from that standpoint and say, what the hell is the difference between 5.2 million and 4.4? But it's the precedent, and it's also they're projecting then, okay, if he wins in year one, then he's going to get even more in year two and even more in year three, and then that sets us behind the eight ball. That's how each side is looking at it. Right. So in a vacuum, I can understand it. But is this really what I just read to you? It sounds like the frickin' Hunger Games. Like, is that really what this system is supposed to be?
No, it shouldn't be. It really does. It sets people up for just vindiction, like coming at you, just horrible. It puts people in bad positions.
Yeah, and the Betances stuff we were talking about, how do we know that the evisceration and the savaging as passing rights didn't somehow
affect his performance. Those are great words, by the way. Great words to describe this, because that's exactly what it sounds like.
Like, Betances looked like a shell of himself for a portion of last season. And how do we know that isn't because he had what he went through in the offseason? Like, I understand it shouldn't affect him on the field, but on a human nature, I understand how it could.
Yeah, well, it just turns out his mechanics were off. And then, okay. When he fixed his mechanics, he was lights out again. So
right, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do. I know. I think it's, in certain instances, I think it's an unnecessary process. And in this particular instance with a guy like Luis Severino, when we're talking about 5.25 and 4.4, you know, find a happy place and sign a guy. Find a happy
and
place.
And if I have I have to read punchable Randy Levine's face and his comments about how if he's bad mouthing Severino and I'm looking at the numbers 4.4, 5.25, I'm going to say screw you. I'm siding with Severino on this.
Yeah, I mean, it's just too close when you're looking at a guy like Severino. And, you know, look, Betances, I think one of the bigger things, too, with Betances was he was in a weird place with the fact that he was not a closer, but he had filled in for a closer. Yep. And like, where are you? And I think that was one of the big, you know, deciding factors of, you know, what player are you? I don't really know. And the numbers don't really tell the full story of what you did and, you know, the position that you're in. And, you know, that's why we have guys. You look at guys all over the league that want to close. There's a reason for that, because they can get a key stat like saves. And
it's
especially
kind of
if you're early in your career, it makes a lot of sense for that. But yes, the way that baseball has moved on, past the standard metrics, the standard saves and just strikeouts and all of these ERA and the baseball has moved past this. Like
the StatCast numbers. So it's actually interesting. Passan said that they don't use StatCast metrics for a couple of reasons. One is because the teams end up usually looking better in those instances, because you can always find a StatCast metric that says a player is not good. And also, you can always find a StatCast metric that says a player is good. Right. So it's way too across the board. Like, oh, his spin rate on his fastball is this. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean he deserves more money because his spin rate is X? No. So they kind of throw those out the window, and you end up back at the more quantifiable stats, home runs, saves, war, and other more, I don't know what the word is, archaic metrics.
They're not archaic. They still tell a story. I mean, I still believe in some of those numbers, and that you can look at those numbers and still get a general idea of who that player is. I still believe that. Do I think that when you go through these metrics and you start narrowing it down, you could find out more specifically who he is and what he does within those numbers? Absolutely. But for a guy like Betances, going back to him, it was the standard numbers that baseball history projects and that you see in the Hall of Fame and you know, on the back of baseball cards, if they still exist, those numbers didn't tell the full story of who Dellin Betances was that year.
Right. I just keep laughing at the line. Players often sit through a savaging of their accomplishments. It's just so ridiculous. And another interesting part of that article was that it's expensive. It's an expensive process. And when you're only talking about a gap of less than $1 million, well, if you're going to spend a couple hundred grand to win an argument, what really is the point? And teams know that.
Precedent.
But teams know that. And then the players don't want to go sit there for 5 hours and get trashed. They don't want to have to spend $100,000 on lawyer fees. They just say, fine, I'll take the deal.
Yeah, it needs... Passan's absolutely right. It's an archaic process that needs to be changed. The problem with baseball is it takes forever for anything to change and move in a way that makes sense, especially on the back end business side of it. Front end, sure, you know, we'll add a pitch clock. We'll do stupid shit to try to appease the other one. But when it talks, when they're talking about dollars and cents and how those dollars come to play and how we figure out how each player gets paid and how much the owners are giving up, then that process, if you're going to change that process, it's going to take some serious negotiation and probably time and people giving up things on both sides of camp.
And that's why there's some talks about a potential strike coming up, because baseball is setting records for revenue year over year. They set another record for their revenue last year, and players are sitting there saying, well, where's the money coming back in free agency? It's not coming back.
Yeah.
So they're pissed off.
They're pissed off. And again, I think some of that is, I mean, I get the players coming out there and saying that the fans, I don't really. So when the fans are, when we're all bitching about the fact that the Yankees are making more money and they're adding more money and lining their pockets and such, I got two ways of thinking about this. Like, I understand it on a surface level thinking, and you're saying, well, they're pocketing this much money, so they should be putting more of it into the roster because they have that money. Well, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that money should be used if appropriated correctly, and they make the team better and. It doesn't have to be unnecessary, and you fill the needs, and you're doing all these things that make sense for winning. I get that. I know a lot of people think that you have to have Machado to win anything. I don't believe that. I think this team right now, as it stands, is you know, look up and down the roster, is one of the more talented, one of the most talented in baseball still. When you look at Boston, I was having this talk last night with a buddy of mine who's a big Red Sox fan. When you look at the talent level, like the two teams are very, very close in talent level. The Red Sox were shitting rainbows last year. Everything went well for them. And when you see the way that the Yankees and how things went for them and the injuries and all of the things that didn't go well, like it was the Red Sox year. It was very apparent. Things went well for them. You look at what happens next year, it could be a different story. It could be a different story. But when you're looking at talent level, I think they're very, very close in talent level. And in fact, I would almost sway that the Yankees have more talent. But you have to make sure that the team works well together. And guys like LeMahieu, guys like that, who are complementary to what you already have, to me, make your team better.
Yeah, I kind of get pissed off at the Yankees Twitter argument. And it's actually something that it's become a beast in of itself. Don't you agree? Yankees Twitter.
Yes.
It's just it's like cannibalizing itself, and it snowballs, and you get these ridiculous takes. But I hate the argument that, oh, the Yankees should just go out and buy all of the best players because they're the Yankees and they can.
Right.
Ignoring the fact that they've added, they re-signed Jay Happ and they paid him a decent contract, and he will be there for a full season. That adds value to the team. They brought in Zach Britton again for a full season. That adds value to the team. They traded for James Paxton. That adds value. It's not like they've done nothing. They're acting like the Yankees have just done nothing. And it's annoying.
You know, when you look at last year, everybody's talking about how the Red Sox were so much better because they won the World Series. And that's the reason. They won the World Series. Who was the answer these two questions for me. Who was the most valuable player of the ALCS? Do you remember? I know we all tuned out, but do you remember?
I don't remember who won it.
It was Jackie Bradley Jr.
I was going to say David Price, because didn't he pitch in three games?
He pitched ridiculous. Jackie Bradley Jr. won the award. Did anybody say that Jackie Bradley Jr. makes the Red Sox so much better and is a guy that puts them over the top to win the ALCS,
you know what,
or to
shit.
Get to the World Series? Okay, hold on. Well, I got one more. Who is the freaking MVP of the World Series?
Pierce.
Steve freaking Pierce. Okay? Yeah. Steve Pierce. It wasn't J.D. Martinez. It wasn't Mookie Betts. It wasn't Chris Sale.
Should have been David Price, though.
Fine, but it wasn't. It wasn't the guys where they spent a ton of money on to bring in. It was a freaking role player, Steve Pierce, who's played on every single goddamn team in the American League East. It was a guy that got hot at the right time, who gamed up at the right time, and played well in the World Series and in the playoffs. Like, that's who it was. So and who did they beat, by the way? Who did they beat? They beat the Dodgers. And who the frig did the Dodgers get at the trade deadline? Does anybody remember that? Because they got Manny Machado. Did they put him over the top? No, they didn't win the World Series. And that's all that we matter. That's all that matters, right? That's all we all care about is who wins the World Series.
Okay, but here's a counter argument. The Red Sox ranked near the bottom in home runs in 2017. That was weird, right? Then they brought in J.D. Martinez and that lineup totally flipped. He changed that lineup. He was one of the best offensive players in baseball last year.
Yes.
Even though he didn't win an ALCS MVP or a World Series MVP, he still carried that team offensively for 162 games to win them 108 games, to get them home field advantage, to get them in a place to get him to the World Series.
I understand that. But when you're looking at the difference between the two teams as far as the regular season, it could have gone either way. If the Yankees had stayed healthy, if there were a couple
if Gary Sanchez didn't loaf it and didn't miss two months of the season, if Greg Bird actually could play baseball, if Aaron Judge doesn't bang up his wrist, like, yes, who knows?
If Sonny Gray wasn't scared to death of pitching at Yankee Stadium.
That's part of baseball, though. That's part of this.
I get it, but look, you could put as much talent as you want on that field, but there is an element of luck that goes into baseball. I'm sorry, but there is. And timing. And when you have everything that goes well, the Red Sox had a lot of things that went well for them, and they played really good team baseball.
Nathan Eovaldi pitched like a Cy Young candidate for the month of October, and who the hell saw that coming?
His bionic arm turned on. They switched it on. They put the little magnets. Activated the fibers in his arm, and he was good. So yes, there's a lot of things that went right, but when you're looking at the construction of these lineups and the construction of the teams, look, I just don't think a guy like Machado makes. In the grand scheme of things, he's a better player at third base than Andujar. Yes, I get that. Offensively, I think we will see this year if Machado gets a full season. If Andujar gets a full season, we'll see where they are offensively.
He did get a full season.
I know, and year two. I want to see year two. I want to see year two.
We had this conversation. It was you, me, and Frank in Facebook. You said, they're both offensively, they're both by war almost the same. And that's not true.
Offensive war.
That's not true. Andujar at a 4.5. Hold on. I'm going to actually look it up.
When we were talking about the conversation in the back end, I was honestly just trying to figure out where the money, how they attach money and Fangraphs, because they make the projections, how they attach the money to the war percentage, and where the baseline is, where that money comes from. That's what we were trying to get to. And the arguments were, or there wasn't even an argument. It was just identifying where Andujar was as an offensive war player and where Machado was as an offensive war player, comparing the two and seeing how they actually line up and stack up next to each other, directly next to each other. Not looking at the defense, because we know what the defense was, and we don't know where Machado is going to play if it's going to be third base. But when you're looking at the two players, I want to see what year two brings for offensively and how these guys are. My point is that when Machado was brought over to the Dodgers and he made that team that much better for the second half of the year, they still couldn't get to the promised land. Yes, he made them a better team, I think, when you're talking about the overall look and feel and numbers. But when you're talking about the playoffs and what you're doing, a lot of that is a crapshoot. You got to get to that point, and you got to have your players play. And if you have guys who are doing the same thing up and down the lineup, then and striking out or hitting home runs, you're going to have dry spells. You're going to see the team disappear at times, and that's what happened with the Yankees. A guy like LeMahieu could come in, put bat to ball, I think makes this team better. It changes the dynamic of the lineup. And changes the dynamic of what they're going to do defensively and how they can put a team out there as a run prevention team as well. There's just a lot of elements that LeMahieu now adds. And I think they've seen where their problem was and how they're trying to change it. Like you said, you identified the Red Sox. They said, we didn't hit home runs. We're going to bring in JD Martinez, who hits home runs and does that. Well, the Yankees weren't hitting with runners in scoring position. They were striking out a lot. They were hitting a lot of home runs.
But
where were the guys that were
DJ
going bat to ball?
JD Martinez.
I didn't.
Please.
I'm talking about the fit.
Just
I'm
because JD
team,
and DJ are inverse of each other doesn't mean that they're going to.
You're crazy for thinking I just said that. I said that the teams identify a fit and a need and what they look,
I know.
What they're looking for. The Yankees need guys who can make contact.
Yep.
They need that.
Yep. Andujar's offensive war last year was 4.6. Tremendous. Manny Machado's was 6.6.
Okay. So now we're quantifying that as two games, yeah?
Two wins.
Did that make a difference?
I'm just saying that
I'm
the
just
players,
asking a question. It's a simple question.
The players are not the same. Manny Machado is a much better player at this point, what we know.
I know that. That's what I said. I do not disagree with you. I would be a moron to make that argument. I said I want to see where Andujar is in year two. I want to see what the difference is in
I'm
year
excited
two.
To see where Andujar in year two is as well. But you also
I
have
think people
to,
forget that but that freaking Andujar was a goddamn rookie last year. A rookie
yes, you
that,
also
that put
have
those
to,
offensive numbers.
Isn't it also fair to say that possibly that is his peak offensively, which is great. It's still great. But for him to get even better, I think is not fair to assume. You can't assume he's going to get better.
No, but I want to see how he develops as a player. It's also unfair to say that at year one, a guy has peaked. That's unfair. To me, that is unfair. Saying a guy can't get better by being a professional and working out
he
his
can
craft.
Be more, he can
and,
be more patient
and maturing.
At the plate.
His body will be maturing more. And he's not even, you know, he's not in his prime physically yet. So who knows what he's going to be when he can get to that point. The guy makes a ton of, the guy can, a ridiculous level, put bat to ball. He makes unbelievable contact. Like, when I see a guy that could do that with the hand-eye coordination, yeah, I believe that that guy can improve.
And it's kind of, I know we've said this 1,000 times, but if he was just mediocre defensively, we wouldn't even be having this conversation.
I know, and I do believe that he could get to that point.
I don't think the Yankees would be having the conversation. Everyone would be sold on Andujar if he could just play average defense.
You know, that's another thing that I think goes completely under the radar with this whole waiting for 2019. When this talk was about and we are all looking forward to this free agent class and looking at Harper and looking at Machado, we all said, okay, Harper is a right fielder. Well, we have a right fielder and he's a stud. Immediately, a lot of people said, okay, not a good fit. When you looked at Machado, we're like, Chase Headley's playing third base right now. This is an absolute fit. We absolutely have to get him. And at that point, boom, it's done. Manny Machado is a New York Yankee, 2019. Well, all of a sudden, Andujar comes out of absolutely nowhere. The Yankees had traded for a third baseman and made the opening day roster as a third baseman. He had 8,000 injuries that came about him. Andujar comes up and hits the lights out and completely takes everybody by storm. That changed things, I think. I think that changed the dynamic of what the team looked like. And you say, okay, now we have a guy who can actually hit. He exceeded our expectations offensively, but he's abysmal defensively. So where are we? Is he going to get better? Is he going to improve defensively? Or are now we are in a position where we have a guy who we like offensively, who's a rookie, who exceeded our expectations, but shit, 2019's here. We're supposed to sign Machado. What do we do? I think that was a wrench in the whole machine.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's also, like you just said with Drury, like, who foresaw the headaches and his vision problems? Like, who saw that happening?
Right.
So who's to say something weird doesn't happen again this year? Something weird will probably happen with somebody this year that is going to change the landscape of the roster once again.
Yeah, and you know what it is? Troy Tulowitzki will be healthy.
Doubtful. I quickly want to touch on Mookie Betts, and he avoided arbitration with a $20 million deal with the Red Sox, and he was in his second year of arbitration. I mean, the guy's been one of the best players in baseball for a number of years. He won MVP. He got a record amount of money for a second-year player. And I think it's interesting because this is what the Yankees are going to be dealing with Aaron Judge in a couple years. If Aaron Judge has another good season next year, he's going to be a first-year arbitration player, and he's going to go to the Yankees and say, I was second in MVP 2 years ago. I carried your team in my sophomore season, and when I went out, you started to struggle. And I hit home runs, and that's a popular metric with these arbitration guys. Like, he could be looking at a serious amount of money, and I really think that the Yankees need to think about that. And if you think the PR with Betances was bad and the potential PR with Severino could be bad, can you imagine the shitstorm that will happen if the Yankees try and pull this crap with Aaron Judge?
No, it'll be ugly. It will be absolutely ugly. And I think that they know that. They know that. I don't know how much the Yankees are caring about their PR at this point, honestly, with the way that the fans think about things. Like, I just don't think they put that a lot of stock into that at this point because they know we'll all be there anyway. But yeah, it could get ugly. The other thing that wouldn't surprise me is if they came out with a big contract for him and extended him.
What I want them to do because I don't want to have to cross that bridge when he's 31 years old.
Yeah. So if you're looking at another large contract, like maybe we see that with a team that's already in position that already has a player in control and just puts a larger extension on them. And then you go for those 10-year deals where you're, you know, where it's a little early, where you're not at free agency yet. That's where I see those longer term contracts could possibly come
into play. But they're not happening around baseball.
They've happened in the past. They haven't happened for a while, right?
They are happening in sports. That was also part of Passan's article, is that players are not getting the long-term extensions when you're young. You have to wait now till you're 30, and 10 years ago that was fine because you were getting 7-8-year deals in your 30s. So you're not getting that anymore.
Well, one of the big reasons you're seeing in other sports too is because of salary caps and flexibility for these teams to stay under the cap and then still add to the team so that they're not just being dominated by one guy on, as far as payroll. So that's, I mean, you see that a lot in, you see it a lot in hockey. Football is a totally other animal as far as how they're paid.
It's and, apples and how they can get dropped.
Yeah, but when you're talking about like hockey and basketball, like you see longer term contracts. But again, a lot of that also is to be flexible and manipulate the contract so that
you spread out the salary cap. Like in hockey, you see like 20-year deals to just get around that fudgery with.
But because of the tax threshold, you know, there's an element of a cap. Now we're seeing it. I mean, it's working
to an extent now.
To an extent,
it?
Yeah. I think players wouldn't say that, but yeah. As far as owners, it's I guess it's working, and we're talking about you know, having good teams all over the place with you know, smaller markets. Yeah, I'd say it's working for in that instance, but I don't know.
I find it all very interesting. Really,
it is. It's and you could go a million different ways with the way that this is, by looking at the players, by looking at the different unions and how strong the players' union is, and then you look at a big market team compared to a small market team, and is the small market team, you know, spending what they should from what they're getting from the revenue of the tax penalties, and there's a ton of things that you could talk about this.
Yeah. you want some good news?
Please, Yankees, give me some good news.
The Yankees announced the times for the schedule next
year.
Oh,
I love this.
And there are a lot more 6:35 p.m. games during the week at home. I think it's spectacular. We talked about this last year. You want to trick people into the fact that games are being shorter, just start them earlier.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I will play by that. I will. That is a mirage I will sign up for, no doubt about it. And just having a game, what, half hour early? I love it. That's a big deal. You know, 11 o'clock and 10:30, 10:30 and 10 o'clock. That's a big deal to me.
Fine. If games can end at like 10:20, that fine. It's the 10:50, 11 o'clock games midweek, night after night against the freaking Tampa Bay Rays because they made 45 pitching changes. Right. It makes me want to gouge my friggin' eyes out.
Yeah. So I like this. I think this is a trend that should continue. They definitely added a lot more. I think most of them are. A lot of them are front half of the season, right?
Yeah, most of them are before Memorial Day, which I guess also for the fact that the weather is usually crappier, especially the fact that they start in March now. Like the first game of the season is late March at home. Like it could be 35, it could be sleeting,
way lower than 35. Yeah, it could be snow. It could be an ugly, ugly day.
And there's also a couple more notes. The Yankees only go to Boston twice in their both four-game series, and that's because of the London games, which will start at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday and 10 a.m. on Sunday. We get some breakfast baseball on the East Coast on that Sunday.
Yeah, the fact that they only go twice is interesting, I think, too. It's that's
four-game gauntlet series, too, and we remember what happened last year in August.
Yeah.
All right, so a couple... Quick more notes before we wrap up. CCU talked about his health on his podcast with Ruco, and he said it sounds like it was a lot more serious than we originally thought. 90% blocked artery, and the doctors said if he had gone on that trip to London, there's a good chance he would have died.
Jesus. Yeah, no, I don't think we knocked down the severity of what it is. I think more of the procedure that was happened has become more of a routine. That's I think what we're referring to. But yeah, the fact that he had a 90% block in the artery, like that's just scary stuff right there. So very thankful, obviously, that you know it was caught and taken care of, and that he's on the mend and approved for baseball activities and all that stuff. So it sounds like he's you know, full steam ahead, which is very, very good news.
You know, Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
Yeah, he also had something I think a lot more serious than
you're talking
CC
about
had.
Like Silent Bob, Jay and Silent
Bob.
Right?
Jay and Silent Bob. Yeah, yeah. Mall Rats, whatever. He had, I don't know if you had, he had a massive heart attack last year. And he also had a blocked artery, like even more severe than Sabathia. Doctors gave him like a 2% chance of living. He was on Joe Rogan's podcast. He was talking about this. And he said that he went on the potato diet where all he ate was potatoes, lost like 20 pounds, totally changed his health. Maybe that's what CC should do.
Potato diet. I had never heard of such a thing.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that
was
good for you.
All you can eat is potatoes. You can't put any butter or oil on them or anything. So basically, you just eat potatoes for like a set number of weeks, and your body just like totally like does a 180 on everything. And he's a lot healthier now. And
he's very skinny. I've seen a picture of him. He looks
weird.
Like a totally different person.
Yeah, but good for him because he almost died. But I'm not trying to make light of this. We've always joked. Fat CC is better than skinny CC. It's kind
I think CeCe has talked about that too. He says like his playing weight is he knows how to play to where he is, where he's a little heavier. Like he's familiar with the way his body feels and such at that level. So he's talked about that as well. That.
And I think a lot of football players, like offensive linemen and defensive linemen,
they
probably
shrink.
Go through this as well. But I'm surprised that like Yankees doctors or nutritionists haven't said, okay, you can be an air quotes healthy 290 pounds. You don't have to be a Captain Crunch 290 pounds. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, I don't know if that's necessarily how, I don't know how that works. I'm no dietitian, but I think naturally if you start eating better, then your fat starts turning into muscle, and you just start burning things differently. So whatever, I'm not even going to get into that. I don't know. And then as far as like where does your strength go if you're losing some of the weight? Like I'm sure Kevin Smith wasn't in peak like physical condition when he lost all that weight either. Eating just potatoes doesn't sound like the most like well-rounded,
Kevin,
healthy diet.
And you can't even compare the two because Sabathia is an athlete and Kevin Smith is not.
Exactly. That's my point. So you have to be aware of where your muscle is going as well and how other things happen. So whatever, like I just want CC to be healthy. If he could play at a weight where he's good, then he should play. If the way that he has to play at a level where he's not healthy and he has to eat, in a way that affects the way his heart is, like I literally hope he just stops playing and takes care of his body for his own family. Like,
and that was going to be that's my what next, he should do. That was going to be my next question. Like I do think this has implications for 2019 CC.
I agree with you. And I think if he's not playing if he's playing at a different weight, we saw when he lost a ton of weight and how he pitched, it just didn't seem like he was comfortable at there, playing at that weight either. So look, I just hope that CC has realized, and it seems like he really has, that first and foremost right now, he's a family man and he's got to take care of that. If he could pitch to a level where he's effective, with the Yankees, then great. If not, then, hang him up, man.
There is
no shame in him hanging him up to be healthy and to be with your family, really.
And we're going to read one mailbag. I just want to quickly give people a reminder that the spring training event tickets are on the website. They're still for sale, correct?
There's like 10 tickets left. So, right, yeah, they're going to be gone very soon.
$70 for the ticket for Saturday, March 16th. That includes domestic beer, wine, as well as an open food buffet. It's going to be in the bullpen club above the first base side. We did it last year. It was a ton of fun. And it's kind of nice because if it's a really hot day, you get some shade up there.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a good spot in the stadium. Go check it out on the Fan Shop. Like Scott said, 10 tickets left. All right, let's read this mailbag from Michael F. We know the Yanks are going to likely sign another infielder. So this was obviously before LeMahieu. But do you see them signing another outfielder, especially if one drops to a bargain price? I know Cashman rolled off the six outfielders as a justification for not signing Harper, but they had essentially the exact same depth chart last year, plus McKinney, and it seemed like it took a week for them to already feel thin. Frazier and Ellsbury hurt in spring training, Hicks and McKinney in Toronto. Doesn't this seem like a mistake? Health aside, I'll always love Gardy, but he shouldn't be starting, and who knows what to expect from Red Thunder or Ellsbury. Ha. I know Stanton will likely see time in left field, but it seems to me that they need one more. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting dilemma because you're right. When we talk about the surface level guys, the six outfielders that he's referring to, it can get thin, and it did get thin. Like there were a lot of injuries that happened fast last year, and when you have that, and then all of a sudden you are thin. Because Michael's right. Like it was very fast that all of a sudden we were thin in the outfield.
It was
when
one
we,
series.
When we
it
saw
was
that
one
as a
series,
deep, yeah, as a strength, and that's why I see a guy like Tyler Wade will be playing as a could play an important role in the fact that he's a good defender all over the field. Like I think that is a guy that we will see, like, another switchblade that could go in there and defend, and who knows what we get from offensively. They may take a shot at a guy that they're adding depth into the AAA, and we've seen that. They've been some small moves, a minor league contract signed of guys that are going into the minor leagues that will add to the depth, and so we have seen that. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw more of that.
Yeah, and Michael's obviously maybe even alluding to something like a Marwin Gonzalez signing, and I don't see it happening at this point.
No, I think they chose LeMahieu over Gonzalez because he plays because of the flexibility in roster. Like I know LeMahieu doesn't play the outfield, but
right? Yeah, Gonzalez is a more I guess he can play more positions, but doesn't play the positions as well.
Right. So they already have that guy.
Yeah. All right, guys, if you want to submit mailbag questions, just keep an eye out for the Facebook posts and the tweets. We put them out a couple times a week, usually towards the end of the week. And also you can submit them anytime at bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. Scott, I wanted to update people. So you remember I was doing Dry January?
Yes. No longer?
I made it 11 days and 8 hours.
You weak bastard.
It was a valiant effort. I almost made it 15 days, which is almost half the month, which is, you can round up to the full month. So I did it. I did Dry January.
You did absolutely nothing close to a Dry January. And the last time I spoke with you on the show, you sounded miserable. And I could tell that you wanted to drink very badly.
Was I more chipper today?
I'm glad you fed the beast. You needed it.
Oh boy. Maybe I'll try it again next year, but most likely not. Any last words, Scott?
No, let's just, let's have a nice social media week, huh? Let's all get along and
everyone be nice to one another.
And move forward into this positivity around this team, because it's a good team. Still a good team, by the way.
Can't we all just get along?
Still a good team.
All right, we'll talk to you guys next week.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.